Hi everyone, my name is Eugenia Chow and I run the Instagram account Ugreenia. The Everyday Activist podcast is founded under the belief that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to activism and anyone can get involved.
Surabhi and Sayuri are co-founders of the project Amara, a youth-led organization based in Pune, India, working to make menstruation more sustainable for menstruating bodies and the environment alike. After learning about the hazards caused by sanitary napkins, they made it their goal 4 years ago to create a culture that is period positive, make sustainable menstrual products equally accessible to everyone, and bring about period parity in India. In this episode, we discuss the health and environmental hazards of conventional period products, the importance of including non-menstruators in the conversation of normalizing menstruation, why periods are a gender equality issue, and how to generate sustainable and equitable long-term change. As you will learn in this episode, period poverty and periods in general are issues that impact so many dimensions of society and sustainability. It was so inspiring to learn about what these girls are doing to tackle this stigma in India, so I'm super excited for you to listen in to what they have to say. Hi, Sayuri and Surabhi, and welcome to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. It's really exciting to have you both here to talk about menstruation in India specifically and how this relates to sustainability as well. So firstly, could you both take turns introducing yourselves and perhaps how you got involved with this project?
Hi, my name is Surabhi. I'm one of the co-founders of the project Amara. And I'm 19 and I'm studying liberal arts in Canada right now. But due to the pandemic, I'm back in Pune, where we all are actually.
Hi, and my name is Sayuri. I'm 20 and I also live in Pune, and I'll be starting my undergraduate studies this year. And Surabhi, I and three other of our co-founders, we all went to the same junior college where we did our 12th, which is like, I guess, the equivalent of high school. And that is where we started the Project Amara.
So could one of you please give an overview of what the Project Amara is? What is your mission? What do you do? And how do you work towards this goal that you're trying to achieve?
So when we were in our 11th grade, which is, I think, junior year for other people, we had to do a social impact project as part of the school curriculum. A project that would impact our community in a positive way, and we had to address the broader theme of waste management. And for one reason or the other, all of our previous projects fell through, and we were just sitting together and discussing what we could do together. And we were all of us were very passionate about women and empowerment and sustainability. And we thought that the issue of the disposal of sanitary napkins was a good one to deal with. And we started as a school project. So we really did not envision this to be we didn't think we would be working on this 4 years later, and we didn't think it would be an actual organization. So we started in 2016 and we all were using sanitary napkins at the time. And we, all of us, did not like using them because they're just really uncomfortable and they cause rashes and itching and they smell terrible. And we were all wondering, why is it that we have to use this? Because we didn't know that any other alternatives existed. And we realized that other alternatives exist, like the menstrual cup, for example, but we just didn't know about it because there isn't a lot of awareness around this. And so we started researching on menstrual cups and how to use them, and at the same time also researching on sanitary napkins and disposable single-use products like tampons as well, and what really goes into making sanitary napkins and tampons and any single use product. And while we were looking at it, we realized that companies don't really put the ingredients on the packaging because they don't really want you to know what they put in the products. And so we, like, after a lot of digging, we found out all these materials, it contains a lot of plastic and a lot of harmful chemicals, and we were shocked. How can we use this? And we wondered, would we really be using this if we knew what really went into it? And so basically we wanted to create awareness, so we started having sessions and circles with women and girls around us, and we started talking about all of this that we had just found out, what goes into making a sanitary napkin, what are the health effects of it, what are the environmental effects of it, how it actually affects the environment, and how the improper disposal of it causes so much harm to the environment. And we didn't just want to leave this information out there with no solution for them. We didn't want to say, oh, this is what sanitary napkins are, don't use them, but not give them an alternative. So we started talking about menstrual cups, and after a while we also started talking about cloth pads and biodegradable pads and other sustainable options as a way to create awareness. And we basically want to create a support system where people can come to us and talk about what they might be facing, or if they have any problems using a particular product. And that's what we've been doing basically for the past 4 years, is having sessions with a lot of different demographics, and not just women but also non-menstruators. We've had mixed sessions, and that's what we've been doing basically.
Mm-hmm. So you briefly talked about how you learned about the different, like, environmental effects of these sanitary pads and the improper management, and also the chemicals and the different toxins that are contained in the products. Could you briefly describe what specific things you discovered during this process?
So basically the first thing we realized is that a lot of big companies, they use a lot more plastic than, let's say, local brands. So most of their pads, they're trying to make them as thin as possible. They're trying to make them as comfortable and discreet as possible. So the criterion they're looking at to basically make a pad better are very superficial things. So what we found out that many, many mainstream brands contain 75 to 80% plastic. So it becomes extremely not degradable. They have 5 layers of plastic, and they want to make it leak proof. So that is another thing. The second aspect of it is that since the pad is so thin these days, it has something called the superabsorbent polymers, which is something that increases the absorbency for up to 30%. So basically they want to ensure that, while at the same time they want to make it thinner and thinner and thinner, they can keep saying that it can hold this much liquid at the same time. So that is another factor. I think the thing that we found most horrifying in a way was the use of bleach to whiten the pads. So I think in a lot of places we have the notion in our heads that anything white or extremely white is a sign of purity or healthiness or hygienic things. So we immediately associate that with cleanliness. I mean, even ourselves, like, we are, I think, all a part of that. That I think even I don't know if I would have used a pad if it looked like what the ingredients actually look like. So if it looked beige or brown, I don't know if it's as appealing or not. So that was definitely one more thing that really bothered us. Another important part is that many mainstream brands in India, at least, have added perfumes in the pad. So they have a very distinct scent. Again, this is due to the regulations that are put on pads. So in India, at least, these regulations haven't been updated since 1980. So it's been around 4 decades, and we still use these superficial criteria to check whether a pad is good to go out in the market. So what they check is how it looks, how it smells, the comfort level, and just the overall appearance of it. So I think when we think about the effects on someone's body or the environment. These are really things that shouldn't have the top priority. So I think these were some of the things that really bothered us, understanding how long it takes for a pad to degrade. So mainstream brands, they take, let's say, a minimum of 800 years for one pad to biodegrade. So even when we say biodegrade, it doesn't mean that it turns into soil, which can ultimately grow plants. It just means that it breaks down into very tiny polymers. And understanding that, I think, was the biggest eye-opener, because we feel that a lot of people these days, and this is including us, we don't really understand or even think about what the products we're using contain, what it does to our bodies, what it does to our environment. And we especially don't think about the afterlife of any product. So what happens to the product after it's being discarded by you? So I think even in our sessions, when we bring this up, we try to tell people that it is, it has become a little bit normalized to not think of these things, but we feel that it's very important. And a lot of people actually, when they understand this, they do want to change. It's not that there is some inherent idea in people's minds that like they want to use products which might be harmful. It's just that they really don't know, and there isn't awareness about this. And you won't see any companies talking about this, because obviously they want to put the best impression forward. So I think these were the things that truly wanted to make us shift. It kind of was the biggest motivation for us to tell other people to shift to sustainable products as well. So I think those were some of the biggest things we found.
Yeah, you made a really interesting point about how a lot of people, I guess, identify whiteness with purity and like cleanliness as well. Mm-hmm. I know that a part of your mission with the Project Amara is also destigmatizing menstruation in India. So I'd like to hear more about what was it like growing up in India, getting your period, and mm-hmm. how, if so, were you treated differently during these times? And were there any very obvious stigmatization that would be played out when you're on your period?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think we would all agree that everyone's experience with menstruation is very, very different. And the same is in India. And it really depends on your family and your extended family and the city you grew up in, or just the area you grew up in. And it really depends on a lot of things. How you experience menstruation. And I think for me, being from a city and being from a pretty open family, there wasn't really a lot of stigma around menstruation, but my mom never had the talk with me. So everything that I knew about menstruation or what periods were was through my school or through a friend. And it really, so my family, I think we're not religious in that sense, but my parents were not progressive enough to actually have the talk with us either. So it wasn't like it was hush hush and you can't talk about it or you can't do certain things, but it was never something that was talked about. And I also remember when I first got my period, I was very ashamed of telling people that I had started bleeding. I got it when I was in sixth grade, and I was very, very scared that people would find out that I had started my period and somehow they would kind of exclude me. This was especially in school, because in our class, like those who had started their period, they kind of formed their own group, and it was just a very interesting dynamic, and I did not want people to find out that I had started bleeding.
Yeah, so for me, it was almost identical. Surabhi and I went to same school, so we've known each other for a long time. So this school dynamic was pretty much the same. Again, we're from the same city, so it was the same thing at my house as well. So again, my mom did not talk to me about it, but she did tell my grandmother to talk to me, and that was very interesting. And also we were we talked about it in school. So we had a proper session where they talked about menstruation and a lot of things surrounding it. So at least in that way, when I was in that urban space, I didn't feel any kind of stigmatization. When I was in, when I got my first period, my mom wasn't in the country, and it was my dad who was at home, and he asked me if I needed anything, and it was really nice. And I remember that when my mom found out, she cried because she missed it. Like, she missed me getting my first period. And she told my grandmother to do a sort of puja. So essentially like a very tiny festival event thing. That's something that we do. Also, it is common in southern and I would say central India that there is a tradition of celebrating the first period. So that was something that happened. And for me, it was the most horrifying thing to live through, because I felt so uncomfortable, even though they were creating such a wonderful thing. They were kind of, you know, celebrating me stepping into womanhood. But when you're, I guess, 14, 15, that's really not something that is very enjoyable. At least it wasn't for me. And I felt very uncomfortable with it. But I had a very different experience when I went to my hometown, which I would say is a village, but a little bigger, I would say. So there it is very common for women to sit completely separately from the entire family. So there is a tradition of having either separate huts or a separate room where the woman would sit when she's menstruating. She has her separate utensils, clothes. No one's supposed to touch her. She's not supposed to touch anyone. She's supposed to wash her own clothes, utensils, anything she uses. So that was the first time I saw this stigma. Obviously, I had heard about it, but I think a lot of times when you're in nuclear families and if you don't have grandparents living with you, or if you don't have extended families living with you, you can kind of get by these traditions. But it is still very common, even I would say in a lot of urban spaces, and it's definitely very common in rural areas or where you would have extended joint families to have this whole thing where the woman sits separately and no one's supposed to be in contact with her. So I think stigma definitely exists. I think both of us and a lot of people were lucky not to face it in the way that a lot of people do, but it definitely exists.
I actually spent 3 months living in Nepal last year. And I lived in a homestay in like a rural village, but also in an urban area. And whenever I was on my period, I wasn't allowed in the kitchen. And also I wouldn't be allowed to go into like different prayer rooms as well. So I thought that was really interesting how that it's still like very much ingrained into the culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember this time when we were on a field trip and we were visiting a temple, and everyone, our teacher asked us, for those who are menstruating, they weren't allowed to enter the temple. And it's still there, and there are so many temples that still follow this, and women are still not allowed to enter these temples when they're bleeding.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think we can go about normalizing menstruation and breaking the stigma around periods?
This is, I think, the easiest and the hardest solution. I think the key is to just start having conversations. It's to just have conversations about periods and to start having this dialogue. When we see our moms and our dads and the adults in our lives talking about this openly, we also feel that this is not something that is a secret, that it's something to be hidden, something that you can only talk about behind closed doors. And once you start talking about this, you realize that you can't stop talking about it. Like, since we started the Project Amara, like, we have become so comfortable talking about periods with anyone, regardless of where they are, what they look like, what age they are. We can just talk to anyone about it. And Yeah, and not just women, you know, people, non-menstruators, boys, men, they also are very curious about this, and they also need to be included in this conversation to be to become an ally, someone who can support this. And everyone should be included in this conversation, and I think that's one way to make it more normalized in a cultural setting. But from the policy level, one thing is removing the period tax. You know, why is there period tax on menstrual products? This is ridiculous. And also the way that menstruation is portrayed in media and through ads, like showing blue ink on sanitary napkin ads, and not actually just kind of saying what it is, but not really. And even in like movies and TV shows, how menstruation is dealt with. Like, for example, in sitcoms like The Big Bang Theory, anytime someone mentions, you know, menstruation, all the male actors just kind of cringe and they're like, oh, don't talk about this. You know, this is not how you deal with this. It's not something disgusting. Like, it, and media has such a huge influence on us. And when you do it this way, everyone kind of thinks that this is how we should react to such things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love how you also incorporate like non-menstruators into the conversation and your different workshops as well. Could you talk a bit more about the role that people who do not menstruate, whether it be women who don't menstruate or men who don't menstruate or just anyone who doesn't menstruate, how they can also play a role in rewriting the narrative around menstruation?
Yeah, so I think what we try to do is I acknowledge that all those who do menstruate may not necessarily identify as women, and all those who don't identify as women can also menstruate. And like, it's not like men, women, it's not a binary, and we try to address that. And in terms of the role of non-menstruators, I think we all are part of this patriarchal system, and we are all affected by it. And even men are, and even women are. And when period has been something that has been a woman's, not responsibility, but something that happens to her, and it's kind of been our thing, and we don't want the world to find out about it. And that's been kind of it. And women, more than men, are the ones who kind of follow this and don't talk about this with anyone. They don't want to talk about it. They find it disgusting and not nice. And when we find encouragement from non-menstruators, that can be very helpful. And also creating awareness on what exactly menstruation is, what the effects can be, and how different people experience it differently, and making sure that there's education on these things, and not just for those who experience it, but also for others. You know, same way that we talk about different countries, like situations in different countries, it's the same way. We should be aware of what is happening with someone who lives in very close proximity to us, you know, your mother, your sister, your daughter, it could be anyone, and you should know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. What have been some of the biggest challenges your team or organization has faced in trying to promote healthy menstruation within the context of India?
I think it would be difficult to call these challenges, because so the structure we follow, like Surabhi said before, is that we conduct sessions. Now, mostly these are spread through word of mouth. So we do a session for someone, and then they tell their friends, family, people they work with, and it keeps growing like that. So in most cases, people who do come for our sessions are people who already know what we're going to talk about. So they are already someone who wants to know about it. So in that sense, we haven't really gotten a lot of negative response in terms of menstruation itself. Now, where challenges do arise are when we talk about menstrual products. So, for example, when we talk about the menstrual cup, there is this whole idea of hymen and how it is connected to virginity. So for a lot of people, that might be a hesitation if they feel that, especially younger girls or people who aren't married, if they feel that there is a chance that the cup might essentially rupture the hymen, they feel that they don't want to use it. Or I would say in general, especially maybe in the South Asian or Southeast Asian cultures, something foreign entering your body, especially the vagina, is definitely a taboo. So that is somewhere that we sometimes find hesitation. But it is also very, it's also not as much as we thought it would be. So when we started out the project, we were mostly talking to people our age. We were talking to people from housing societies. So we were, I think, in a way trying to focus on a demographic that is very similar to us, because we thought that these are the people who would be able to understand it, that these are the people who would be able to use it and would want to use it. But after a while, we started going to villages, we started talking to people in urban slums, we started talking to elderly women, and we realized that we ourselves have such a stereotypical idea of how people might view menstruation, that we feel that, you know, maybe someone from a different background might not see the value in this product. But it's really not that. I feel that that is why menstruation is such a close thing to our hearts, because people from extremely diverse backgrounds still have somewhat of a similar experience of menstruation. Now, I'm not saying they have a similar experience maybe socially or culturally, but within themselves as an individual, a lot of times it is something that they can bond over, that is relatable to them. So we found out that these conversations can be had successfully in any sort of settings, as long as you go in with a positive approach. That we always try to start out not whisper it, or like even if we're in a semi or public space, we try to talk about it openly and loudly, how we would talk about other things. We try to not start it out as something that should be a taboo. And even though some people might feel uncomfortable initially, we've always seen that by the middle or end of the session, everyone is talking, they're sharing experiences, they're laughing. And I think we really don't understand how important having that safe space is to talk about menstruation, especially when you haven't been able to do that ever. So I think the only challenge would be how people think about different products, and to try to make them a lot more accessible. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. So since starting the Project Amara a few years ago, have you noticed any changes in, I guess, how the community responds to these issues? If so, how has it played out?
I think the biggest change would be amongst the team of the core team of Amara. So like Surabhi said, we have been doing this for 4 years now, and we have changed so much in the way we ourselves view menstruation. So the way we talk about it, the way we present it, we have tried to work on the session content and making it as accessible, as inclusive as possible. We are trying to make the shift to a more gender neutral language. We're trying to incorporate different backgrounds and how we can do that. We're trying to create content that is multilingual, because being in India, there are so many languages and there are so many customs, traditions that people follow. So we're trying to find a place where the content is accessible to a lot of people. So I think that has been the biggest change in ourselves. And when we talk to people, we've started seeing how, for example, if we talk to someone in a session and we talked about different products, and when they come back to us telling us how it was actually using the product, and to hear them be so happy with it. So people feel really differently about their own blood. And I think this is common for most of the sustainable products that, especially, let's say, the cup or cloth pads, you have to be in contact with your own blood. And a lot of times we find it very difficult. A lot of people think it's disgusting, or they feel uncomfortable looking or even touching your blood. So when you have to use these products, you are touching it a little bit, or you have to, in some cases, you might have to wash it, or I feel like you have to be a lot more in tune with your own period. So when they come back and they tell us, oh, we never knew that blood looks like this, because on the sanitary pad, it looks clumpy, it smells horrible, and because of the reactions it has with the chemicals in it. So when they see it in a menstrual cup, and they say, oh, it looks exactly like normal blood, just maybe there might be some clumps in it, because obviously it's not just your blood that is being collected. So their perspective changes on how they view blood as well. And they come and tell us, oh, I told my mom about this. She loves it. I talked to my dad. I tried to tell them how it works. And I feel like even people doing these small things are a huge change in a way, because like Surabhi said before, the easiest way and the hardest way to destigmatize anything is to talk about it openly. And I think this somehow is giving them the space to do that. So I think that is the change that we're seeing. And my personal favorite example is we were holding a session for some school teachers. So the group also had some elderly women who'd already stopped having their periods, and they were in their menopause or postmenopause. So what was really interesting was that after the entire session, one very old lady, she came up to us and she was like, I love this. I wish when I was younger, someone came up to me and told me all these things. And we were like, I'm glad you liked it. And then she said, I want to buy a cup. I want to buy it for my daughter-in-law. And to me, that's such a big thing, because especially in India, I would say with extended families, it's really difficult to talk about these things. And for me, that is change when someone feels like they want to buy it for their daughter-in-law. And I think it's really beautiful. So we've seen a lot of positive change, and hopefully going forward, it just keeps growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really great. It sounds like most of the response you've been receiving as an organization has been very positive. Mm-hmm. But I do imagine that, would you say that there is still some people who recoil at the idea of talking or openly talking about periods?
Definitely. I think if we were to go up to people without them having chosen to talk to us, I think it would be a very different conversation, because I think we've seen this in our own families, maybe, or friend circles, that when we talk about it openly, some people do feel very uncomfortable. And it's not entirely that they themselves don't want to be part of the conversation. It's that they've been out of the loop for so long that they feel like this is the only proper reaction to it. So it has happened that sometimes we go to a place to do a session, or we go somewhere to talk, and if there are other people, women themselves, they would tell them. So if there are men around, or if there are kids around, they tell them to go somewhere else and do this and that. Or in a very interesting situation very recently, during the COVID time, we have been trying to reach a lot of people who aren't getting access to menstrual products. So we fundraised and we did some distributions of cloth pads in communities where there was no or little accessibility to these products. So in one of these sessions, the only common space they had was in front of a temple. So there was some open space there, and we were sitting there. So immediately, because it was such an open space, like people could hear us talk, there were these people who came up to us and they asked us what we were doing. So we said that we're talking about periods and we're talking about this. And they said that, okay, if any of you are bleeding right now, sit far away from the actual, like the staircase of the temple. And they said, okay, do it quietly. There are people around. And he said it in a way like we're planning something and people are going to find out our huge plan or secrets. But yeah, so it happens. But I think since we always plan our sessions, it's less common for people to recoil. But it is definitely true. I mean, any listeners, they can maybe try this in their own house or with their families, their friend circles. And just start talking about periods and see the kind of response you get. And I think that also shows a lot of like how they have been talked about periods, or if they haven't altogether. I think we get to find that out very easily. So I think it definitely does exist, but since we go about it in a particular way, we don't face it as much, but it definitely exists.
Mm-hmm. So I guess ultimately, what does healthy and sustainable menstrual equity look like to you?
The way we think about it and the way we want it to come about is when, obviously, sustainable menstrual products, when they become a product for everyone and anyone. So one part of it is obviously affordability. So when you make sure that it's a price that people can afford to pay, or it's free altogether. So affordability is definitely one aspect of it. Second is accessibility of products. At least in India, a lot of menstrual products are not available in, let's say, drugstores or anything like that. So people have to buy it online. Now that excludes a huge group of people who don't have access to internet or who can't order it online. So accessibility is definitely the second aspect. The third is awareness. People don't know about these products to begin with. So advertising these products and letting people know that these also exist in case you want to use them would be the next step, that people need to know about it for them to be able to use it. And another one is definitely language. So a lot of sustainable conversations take place in English. And especially in India, this leaves out more than half of the population because they just can't be part of that conversation. So we're also trying to make our content multilingual, like I said before. So that is definitely another part of it. So I think when all of these things can come together, we can truly see a future that is sustainable in terms of menstruation. And I think dealing with these both on a personal and a social, as well as policy levels, is, I think, what sustainable menstrual equity would look like to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you put it really well. Do you also base your workshops and the overall direction of your project? Does it align with the Sustainable Development Goals, or do you follow any sort of framework to guide your process?
Yes. So we, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, I think we address a couple of them. So the sixth one, which is clean water and sanitation. And that deals with, as Sayuri mentioned, accessibility to these products and also access to clean water, because that is so important when it comes to menstruation and even when you're using sustainable products, but also not sustainable products, and having access to that. And also the workers who actually have to deal with our garbage, and the waste pickers, or those who have to actually pick it up by hand. And there isn't actual like proper equipment given to those, and they have to suffer from a lot of different of like effects on their bodies, and a lot of things due to the chemicals in these products. So that is clean water and sanitation, and also reduced inequalities, which is the 10th one. And this is the workers' right, and also making policy level changes so that there is accessibility of these products and people can afford them. And we also address the 11th one and the 12th one, which is sustainable cities and communities and responsible consumption and production. So we are trying to create a completely sustainable community, not just community, just a sustainable India in terms of menstruation. We want people to know what their products are, what they're made of, and also start using sustainable products for the environment and for their bodies as well, and have a better relationship with their menstruation. And this is also related to the 13th one, which is climate action. And because the way that sanitary napkins are being disposed right now, about 12 billion pads are disposed of in India annually, and this is only about 20% of menstruators in India that use sanitary napkins. So this is about like 27 hectares of landfills, 9,000 tons. And this is a lot of garbage. And this has a huge effect on the environment in terms of so many things, you know, climate change, and all of these chemicals seep into the soil and into water, and this affects agriculture, farming, which in turn affects the economy. So yeah, basically what you use affects everything. And the 17th one, which is partnerships for goals. So we at Amara, we want to create a network in all over India, a network of organizations, people working in the same area or field, because the five of us, we can't be all over India at the same time everywhere, and we don't speak all the languages. And there's no point in us trying to cover all of India. So we want to create a network of people who want to do this and who can reach their individual communities, their villages, their towns, their cities, where they can make an impact. And we want to create this network. And the fifth one, which is gender equality. I think Sayuri can tell you more about that.
So obviously, when we talk about menstruation, we are trying to promote women's empowerment at the same time. So there are, I think, different aspects in how that works. So one is obviously having the right and having the choice to choose your own product. I think, like Surabhi said in the beginning, most of us have been given sanitary napkins and without any other options. So it's almost that we don't know that anything else exists. And this is true for many people. So I think for women and menstruators to have the option to choose between a multitude of products to decide which one works best for their lifestyle, for their priorities. So I think that is one very important thing. And the second aspect is definitely to start a conversation about this. And it might not seem like a whole lot at the beginning, but I think it drives change in a lot of important ways that if people start talking about it, we can actually get traction and move this forward in a way that can actually bring about some policy level changes, like Surabhi mentioned before. And the third aspect, which I think is very important, is that some of the local companies in India which do produce, for example, cloth pads, they do provide and create employment for women. So it's products that are being created by women, essentially for women and for menstruators. And I think it also helps these women become self-sufficient. So I think there are a lot of things that can also be done in this area. So I think we're also trying to address this fifth goal of gender equality through the Project Amara.
Yeah, no, those are all such important points. And it's really inspiring how your project manages to tackle so many different issues and like aspects of sustainability. I think I read somewhere once that one of the most effective solutions to alleviating climate change or reducing the effect of the climate crisis is by actually empowering women and educating women. So I guess that's another way that your team is doing that. And that's really great. Just to go back a bit, and go back to like the workshop aspect of the Project Amara. Where do you source your reusable pads and the different items that you distribute to other people?
So as of now, we don't necessarily provide all the products that we talk about. So basically the menstrual cup is something that we started this project with, and we think that it's the most sustainable option. You're reducing obviously garbage, which is true for all sustainable menstrual products, but with the menstrual cup, which can be used for 5 to 7 years, I think it also reduces the resources that go into manufacturing a particular product. So obviously this is something that you have to buy at once, and then you don't need to buy anything for a long time. So menstrual cups are something that we do tend to keep at our sessions, simply because I think it helps a lot if you've heard about it, and directly after you can go and purchase it, because we know this for ourselves when we started the project that even though we had decided to do it, it took us, I think, 6 months altogether for the 5 of us to actually get to use the product. So I think if it's there, if you buy it and if you keep looking at it, there is a point where you would actually start using it. So that is the only product that we keep at our sessions. But for the other products, for example, cloth pads and biodegradable pads, we have compiled a very comprehensive list of all the Indian brands which do produce it. And we have the prices, the materials used, where you can buy them, and all this information compiled together. So after our sessions, we share it with the organizers, so they can go back to the people who are at the session and provide them with this information in case they want to buy any of the products. So even with the cups, we're trying to only focus on Indian brands. Because again, one thing is that it helps the economy, and it also helps people in India who are doing something. And one thing that we absolutely are sure is that any product that we talk about, we have personally used it. So we can actually vouch for it and tell you if there are any cons or if there are any issues that you might face with it. So at Amara, we're trying to be as authentic as possible. Obviously, this is a non-profit organization, so money is nowhere close to what we're even thinking about. So when it comes to products, definitely we try to make sure that they're made from good quality. We use them ourselves, and we make sure that they are the products are being sourced properly, and that they're Indian brands. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you touched on this previously when I asked what sustainable menstrual equity looks like to you. But I guess since you are both heading to university and will be in different like locations as well, what are your long-term goals for this project, and how do you think you will continue this in the future?
Yeah, I think our long-term, okay, our like goal for the future for the next, I don't know, like 50, 60 years is to make India completely 100% sustainable. No, not like a goal, more like a dream. But we have a bunch of different collaborations and projects that we have been working on. And we want to emphasize that we don't want to enforce our solution for communities, their solution for their communities, and not our solution for their communities. So as Sayuri mentioned, self-sufficiency is really important. But a couple of things that we have been working on is the Cup for a Cup campaign, where basically people who can afford to buy a cup They buy a cup and then they also buy one for someone else who may not be able to afford one. So you're basically endorsing a cup for someone who cannot. And the other thing is we are going to start an ambassador program. So basically anyone who wants to work for this cause and wants to create change in their communities can reach out to us, and we would provide them with a comprehensive thing, like a document with all the information that they need to conduct sessions in their own language and in their own communities, and resources. And basically we want to keep this movement growing and as much as it can. And we also want to start university chapters, so the way that TEDx functions. And so the goal of this would be to make that particular university campus 100% sustainable in terms of menstruation. So creating awareness in the university, holding sessions, having discussions, and so that this can start making a difference on a university level. And we also, as I already mentioned before, want to create more multilingual content, because a lot of these conversations, as I already said, take place in English. And a lot of the words that we use when we talk about sustainability only exist in English and not necessarily in local languages. And so we want to make sure that this is accessible to all, and they can understand it and they feel connected to it more than anything, that this is something that they can relate to.
Yeah. So I guess finally, what are some resources or general advice you would recommend to anyone who wants to learn more about this issue or who wants to get more involved with raising awareness about these issues in their own community?
So most of the resources we have are local. By that I mean either Indian or even more so to relating to our own state or our own cities in that case. So I think one very important general resource might be to look at the World Health Organization or the UN websites, and they have a lot of campaigns with a lot of things that we talked about today. So sustainability, menstruation, women empowerment, and you can see what all is happening in different places. So obviously what we're doing in India, if we were to branch out, it might not be the same thing as what we're doing right now. So I think finding maybe overarching themes that can be replicated in your own community could be very helpful. Another thing would be obviously to look at different products and see where they're made. And if you can find products which are made in your own country, see what other things they're also doing. So whether they're spreading awareness alongside, whether they talk about women's employment and things like that. So I think when it comes to products, definitely looking at different brands definitely helps. I think a lot of brands also have really good resources about how to use these products and why sustainability is important in that case. And obviously the third thing would be to use the resources that our families and our communities have. So what Surabhi said before, I think is very important, is to create solutions which work for your own community, because I think that just drives self-sufficiency, because a lot of times these products are marketed to you and they are part of this whole consumerist idea. And a lot of times there are options that you can use which don't support this huge system that we can't even imagine in that sense. And we can really help smaller businesses and smaller communities. And so finding your own solutions and seeing what works best is definitely great. And I would say definitely in terms of resources, make sure that what you're looking at is reliable. Even more than that, I would say to see whether it's representative, whether it's inclusive, whether it's intersectional. So we want to think of menstruation in a very holistic way, I would say, is to think about it from the economic perspective, think about it from the environmental or sustainable perspective, think about it from cultural, religious aspects. And I think so finding good resources is definitely a challenge, but I think it can happen. So I think that is something that we might recommend in terms of resources. And general advice, I think something that we've kept saying is obviously start talking. That is the biggest and easiest way you can, you know, drive an entire community is through conversations. And obviously, we would like to mention that if you have any questions, if you maybe want to collaborate with us, if you want to help us in any way, you can definitely reach out to us. And I think even if it comes to products, or if you want to buy something, or if you just in general want to talk, I think so we said we want to create this network, so do not hesitate to reach out to us at any point. I think that is the general advice. I guess Surabhi, you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, and if you also want to donate to us, that would also be very, very lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll put all the links to the Project Amara, where you can donate, where you can learn more about it, in the show notes of this episode, so people can find it there.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to rate and review the show, because that makes a huge difference in helping me get the word of the podcast out. Also, don't forget to subscribe and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next Monday.